to the Valley and Central podcast. Bam! Right in the gut. You see how that's done? The other Central podcasts should learn from that. You hear that, Aftershock Central podcast? I'm talking to you.
Fighting words.
Yeah, fighting words, especially since me and you are on it, Travis. What's happening over there? You don't get that energetic introduction.
It's a different show, man.
It is. It's more chill.
The 7:30 show is completely different from the 9:30 show.
Yes, that's true. That is true. Also, it's Cinco de Mayo, so I may have had a few margaritas.
There you go. Oh, mm-hmm. This is a special day for me too.
Yeah.
This is my last day of partaking in adult beverages for a while.
What?
Yes. I struck a deal with the wife.
Uh-oh. This sounds dangerous. Continue.
We're entering in the baby zone. So we have sacrifices need to be made.
I see.
To bring a baby in the world.
I see.
My last day for a while.
So I heard that having adult beverages is great for having babies.
Oh, I need that report. I need that study.
I have it bookmarked. I'll send it to you.
Thank you so much. You're my savior.
Welcome to the show, the Valiant Central Show. Of course, I am here, Martin. Of course, Duan is here. And finally, Travis, you are here.
I'm here, yes.
We thought you were going to be ditching the VCP, but here you are.
No, man, it's been a busy couple weeks, but happy to join, finally.
So what you're saying is that real life is more important than Valiant Comics. Is that what you're saying? Because that's what I heard. I don't know what you heard, Duan. But,
I hope I didn't hear that.
That's the way it came off to me.
You said that. I didn't say that. So
I think it's implied by your actions.
Yeah, I mean, I was overseas, you know, like that's logistically tough to make that work, you know.
No, that's not an excuse. We could podcast 2 a.m. for you, buddy.
It's true. We could.
Yes, we could.
Yeah, good to know.
It is good to know. I'm going to do an early show call out because I saw this Psylord's lava lamp. And my question to you guys is, Greg Katzman, why don't I have a lava lamp?
Yeah, we need those. I saw that today.
Matter of fact, Ronnie sent me a picture of it. And I was like, Wait, what does that have to do with Psylords? Who cares? Where's my lava lamp?
It reminds you of Star Trek, doesn't it? Like something you would see in Star Trek.
Yeah, I could see that.
Yeah.
I could see that.
But it has glitter in it. Like it's silver. Like it has this, it looks like a rocket almost, right? With this silver tip and a silver base. And the lava lamp looks like it had glitter in it.
So you're trying to make it fit into the theme of Psylords.
I'm trying my best.
I mean, I forgive you because I want it. So it doesn't matter.
Right.
I must have it. Can we talk about Psylords or is that too early? When's that book coming out? It's next month, right?
Next month.
Jeez, it's so far away. I guess we can't talk about it yet.
Yeah, I think it's, like minimal at best. But we could say that we've read the preview, right?
I mean, yes, we can say that. Are we allowed to talk about it? We're allowed to talk about it, right? Will people get upset if we talk about it?
Yes.
Can we do a spoiler-free talk about it?
Yes. I think we can do that.
Is that fair?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Spoiler-free talk about Psylords.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm very excited for this book. You guys know Psylords is one of my favorite all-time Valiant books. Why that is, don't ask. It doesn't matter.
It's great concept.
You like orange, different shades of orange and red.
I love wearing glasses to read my comics.
Exactly.
Yeah. Oh, so like did Matt or whatever talk about what that marketing thing was? Like new Valiant Vision or whatever?
So we can't talk about that.
Ooh. Oh, okay. I thought that was going to be announced.
It's not announced yet.
Okay.
So we can't talk about it.
Well, yeah, forget I said anything.
I mean, I got to be honest. I was a little upset because there was something announced the day that episode came out,
that we had talked about, and there was no mention of it. But then we got an email that I didn't read because I'm terrible with reading emails that Duan pointed out that I guess we also can't talk about. This is the top secret Valiant show.
Top secret.
But I guess we can talk about the X-Men Manowar book because I'm excited for that. I don't think we talked about it last episode because last episode was the one I had Matt on, right? So X-Men Manowar has been announced for October. Brand new series. I'm curious what the new direction is going to be. Because Travis, you and I talked a little bit about the way that X-Men Manowar ended. Travis, we did not really discuss the ending of X-Men Manowar. But before we talk about Star Lords, I think maybe we could start there.
Yeah, do a rehash. Catch me up.
Catch you up. I hope you read the book.
Me? I did read the book.
Okay, good. So, Travis.
Yes.
Tell me a little bit about the ending of X-Men Manowar. 26 issues, long run, not as long as Venditti's, but long run regardless. Give me some thoughts.
I mean, kind of in general, I think I'm not a huge fan of like the Kent run on Exo. Like I enjoyed the stuff that was on Planet Goron.
Yeah.
You know, like that first, whatever it was, 12 issues, 13 issues. Like I was on board for that, but they sold that on a premise of, but when you find out why he's there, like that's going to make all the difference, you know? And they kind of, I thought, did that in a bit of a like slapdash, like kind of half-assed way. Like they gloss over it in a couple panels. When it could have been like full issue or two or three that like deal with this and why he left her, you know, but instead it's like, oh, he's off into space. And like since he got back, he's been a wreck, you know? Like, he's not the character that we knew that was, like, self-possessed. He was king. He had galactic knowledge. Like, he was a dude that hung out naked. And, like, I don't know, you know, like, he was kind of a train wreck. And then he got, like swooped into, like, weird adventures, you know, with, like, the divinity people. So, like, I don't know. Like, it's... I think that they need to do some stuff to kind of rehab the character, rehab his character, and rehab Sana's character in the new, like, Exo series.
So, based on the way that issue ended, though, do you really think we could rehash Sana's character?
I mean, like, he's got a daughter with Sana in, like, Fall of Exo, right?
Sure. But does that mean that we're going to have the Fall of Exo timeline coming in? I mean, that's what I'm curious, right? So we have this new creative team, Dennis Hallam, a.k.a. Dennis Hopeless, person whom I love. He's got a podcast on this network with Cullen Bunn and Emilio Liso. I'm not familiar with him, but I'm digging the art so far. November, by the way. I said October. It's November. I mean, we haven't seen any previews yet, so I don't know what the direction is going to be. But based on the couple of teaser images that were put out, it looks like it's going to be a little more. What's the name for like the Daredevil, the street level stuff? There you go. It looks like it's going to be like maybe more street level, and I don't know how that would work for Exo, and that might not be the case at all. But on the preview images, you see Exo flying over a city, basically. And I'm
wondering. Well, like, also the end of Exo, right? Like, is him going on all these little missions.
Yes. You know?
Like, oh, go stop this assassination in this place and, like, go, like, stop these hackers here. You know, like, Exo used to be the dude that you would bring in for, like, global threats, you know? So it seems like nerfing him a bit to be like, oh, but now he's going to be like Batman.
Yeah. Duan, I'm curious. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I think what I got out the last Exo run was they introduced a lot of cool characters, in my opinion. You know, so I don't know how those characters would be fleshed out in the future. But they also show the armor having its vulnerabilities, right?
Yeah.
They were able to really tap into the armor like – we've never seen, even back from the 90s, like the armor, it almost could get infected with like a virus or whatnot. So that was interesting. So I don't know how they're going to play that out in the future, but it would seem dumb to set that up and not do anything with it. So you got all these new characters, on a cosmic level, which, you know, could add to that divinity run, you know, set of characters that type of timeline or storytelling. And it almost seemed like it was purposeful, you know, like Exo was vulnerable in a sense. So I don't know how that'll play into this new run, you know, how the armor's vulnerable. Will they do anything to shore up the armor so that it's not as vulnerable? Because we've always looked at the armor as like pretty much indestructible.
Yeah.
So in this last run, you can see them peeling off pieces of the armor, you know, which we've seen before, but it was just, it seems like it was almost commonplace, like easy. So I'm interested to see what they want to do with that. So I'll give it a fair shake. I'll see what they want to do to take the storyline forward. You know, so I'm not down on it at all.
Yeah, I think I'm with you, Duan. Because here's the thing, you can't. I talk about this when we talk about like the MCU, right, the Marvel Cinematic Universe, mm-hmm. and you have a giant villain like Thanos coming up. So when you do your next series of movies, like what's the next biggest villain from Thanos? And there's very few that you could go with, right? Maybe like Galactus, and that's probably about it. Like, there's really not anything bigger than that. So when you start doing these huge storylines with a character, and you see his power set getting larger and larger, at what point do you have to find some way to bring that back down to where he can't just take on anything? Spoiler alert for you guys have both seen Endgame, yeah?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay. So I'm sure anybody listening has already seen Endgame because it's made like $30 billion. But if you haven't, spoiler alert, fast forward like 5 minutes. But a character like Captain Marvel in that movie, I didn't see the Captain Marvel movie, but the way that she worked in Endgame, like they can't really go anywhere, right? Like if it just gets too much for anybody else in the MCU, well, just call Captain Marvel. She'll take care of it, right? Because she can take on Thanos' entire army, and Thanos himself, no problem. So at what point do you get that with a Valiant character, for example, right? If Exo has all these abilities, well, you can't really have like a fun adventure sci-fi kind of comic because he can really solve any problem. And for me, at least, that's one of the things that I liked about the original run is because, you know, he did have all these abilities, but ultimately he was still this barbarian, basically.
Exactly.
And he very much acted that way. And so there was – Auric himself was the limiting factor to the power mm-hmm. of the armor. Mm-hmm. And right now you don't have that because when you see the way that Auric has evolved throughout the years, I think in particular through Venditti's run, but even to some extent in Matt's run, he's become a very smart person, right? He's gone from the barbarian to the king. And that can be a little difficult to make that interesting for people when you know that this guy can pretty much do anything, right? If he was still a dumb guy with all these powers, then like, who cares? Right, because he can still mess up, because ultimately he's what's holding the armor back. But in the current run, we don't really have that.
Well, wasn't that the start of the Kent run where he wanted to separate from the armor and say I'm my own man.
Yeah,
I don't want you. He pushed the armor away, and then I think like especially that first arc, Kent kind of said, "Hey, this is a symbiotic relationship here." Like you can be stubborn and bullheaded all you want, but you still need me. You yeah. still need the armor, you know? And then they kind of like, you know, the arcs evolve from there. But is this a maturation of Auric, you know? He was dependent on the armor. First, you know, the original story, he didn't need to, he was a barbarian, like you said. Then he got the armor. He was dependent on the armor. Then he's trying to shun it away. Then he decided he needed it. And then the arc, you know, the whole run ends with the armor is vulnerable too. So they really need each other at this point to kind mm-hmm. of strengthen it. So where do we go from now? I mean, is he coming back to Earth and, you know, is he a more mature leader? Or, you know, is he more sympathetic, a compassionate leader? I don't know. Like, I don't see him being the type of guy that's going to just put his head down and, you know, run through walls like he used to be.
Yeah.
I mean, he might be more strategic, more knowledgeable, more wise. So it'll be interesting to see what they, do with that in this new run, in my opinion.
Yeah, and I think to go back to Travis, I think Sana was a lot of the driving factor behind all this, right? Again, in particular with Venditti's run, and to some extent in Kent's run, although, you know, Kent introduced a secondary love interest with Sana being married off to Volo and all that stuff. Spoilers, by the way, if you haven't read the past 2 years of X of Manowar. But yeah, there's got to be something that drives Auric back into wanting to be a superhero. Because, I mean, it seemed to me at the end of this current run that he was perfectly happy not ever having to wear the armor again. Mm-hmm. Right? They had basically reinvented his home life on the planet Gorum, and he was just going to be a farmer again. But obviously, that can't work for him. And I want to know what it is that drives him out of that, right? Because we see a lot of these things where a character finds happiness in just like the simplest thing. But that never works in comics. There's always something that forces that character to become who they're quote unquote destined to be. And right. Eric is not destined to be a farmer, right? He's had this armor the entire time. His destiny is to be a hero.
But is he going to embrace that? Like, is he going to be like Superman? You know, is he going to embrace what his calling is? Because it seems like to me, he was, like you said, he wanted to be a farmer. He wanted to be a warrior. You know, he took pride in those things, the simple things. You know, it's simple. The warrior code is what it is. I'm a leader. I'm going to lead my people, you know. And he had some setbacks, you know, throughout his life, but he's still a warrior, almost like the internal warrior. You know, he is what he is in that sense. So he's simple. Is he going to be more complex now to where he says, I have a responsibility to protect what? Like he never seems like he has a centralized mission. It's just like, this is the new mission. I'm going to deal with it. Once the mission's over, I'm going to go back to being who I am.
Yeah.
Is he going to have a greater calling? That'll be interesting to see if he gets a greater calling.
Well, I mean, ultimately his mission has been to make sure that the Visigoths are safe in Nebraska. But even that doesn't feel big enough, right? Like,
thank you.
This is basically like a cosmic level character.
Mm-hmm.
And to put him just as being the protector of a group of, I mean, I would assume a couple hundred people tops, doesn't seem big enough for what he is. And that's why I like the potential of what Matt was doing. And I agree with you, Travis. I think those first 12 issues were really great. But once we started to get away from some of that stuff, it almost felt like we're going backwards in some way. And there wasn't really a connection between those two things as to why we would be going backwards.
Yeah. Well, like, also, I thought, you know, like, I think one of the central things about his character, not only is that he's this, like, very powerful warrior, but he's also a king.
Yeah.
You know? And, like, it seems like that part of the character is pretty much gone. And they use the tie-in to Harbinger Wars to kind of have this, like, four-issue message seemingly that resolved in, like, they don't need you anymore, you know? Like, you know, they don't need you to be the king.
Well, yeah, because, like, I mean, Volo's basically leading him.
Yeah, like, I don't know. He's been cucked. He's been replaced. Sana's going to be the queen. And they don't need him to do that anymore, you know? Like, so that's kind of a central piece, I think, of his character that's not around anymore, you know? And I think it's potentially fraught that he's, like, still being an errand boy for the U.S. government when they set him in during Harbinger Wars.
Yeah.
In kind of, like, questionable circumstances, you know? Like, what? I feel like he had a showdown at the end of that where they were like, oh, yeah, U.S. government are kind of being bad, too.
Mm-hmm.
And now he's still doing their, like, errands around the world, you know? That's weird.
And like, what's his motivation to do that right now, right? Because, like, when he was king of the Visigoths, and, like, maybe I could see it, right? He's got some kind of impetus to keep his people safe, but that's not the case anymore, right? And the U.S. government's not going to kick them out of Nebraska because Exo won't do, like, little missions around the world, you know what I mean? Like, it seems like they've been there established enough where that wouldn't happen. And maybe if it did, it would actually make for a really interesting story. Because then you'd get, like, EXO versus the U.S. government. And that could kind of be badass, to be honest with you.
But didn't he get, at the end of the Venditti run, didn't he get like this universal knowledge, this all expansive knowledge of the whole universe? So yep. to do these simple tasks, it just seems like beneath him. So, I mean, what are you doing with that thread? That story thread, like, you know, if he has this whole expansive knowledge, you almost think he's unbeatable.
Yeah.
But then you get the Kent run, and then he shows all this vulnerability. So it just doesn't mesh to me. I don't get that point.
Which is fine. I mean, I like the vulnerability, right? You can't have an all-powerful hero because it's not fun to read it, right? They can just basically take on anybody. But there's got to be, you're right, there's got to be a way that we get from one place to the next. And that's the connection that I haven't seen, and I'm hoping that's the connection that Dennis makes in his run, in some regards at least.
Right.
You know, I think we talked a little bit about this, Duan. I don't know if it was last episode, maybe the episode before, a little bit about going back to basics. And it does seem like that we are going a little back to basics with like the new Bloodshot run that's coming out. That seems to be throwing out some of the continuity in some respect. And again, the book's not out yet, so we can't really judge any of that. But if that's the case, like I'm okay with throwing continuity out as long as the thread that's picked up makes some kind of sense to what's come before. But again, a lot of the problem sometimes stems from Valiant fandom itself, because Valiant fans, we know, are very tough. We are very critical. And that puts the publisher maybe in a tough spot.
Well, if you're going to do it, just let us know. Let me know. We're going to start over. You know, we're going to make a 90 degree turn here. So then, you know, we're not wrecking our brain having this whole conversation. You know, what was in the past. It is what it is. It was a great run, but we're going to attack left here. And then I can just clear the slate, clear my mind and just take whatever you're giving me going forward.
Yeah.
And enjoy the journey.
Well, and one example of that Travis already mentioned was the fall of X-Manowar stuff. Right? Like, does that continue to be in continuity, or is that thrown by the wayside? Right? Because, I mean, I think we can ask that same question for a lot of those books, whether that is still the case of what we'll be seeing in some far-flung future. And I don't think that question has ever really been answered. And I didn't even think to ask Matt last time he was here whether that was the case or not. But I would be curious to know.
Well, Valiant's never really committed about whether that stuff's canon, but they certainly have picked up threads from Fall of Bloodshot
right. In,
you know, Lemire's later issues. And I think that they've picked up, like, threads from Fall of Ninjak here and there, like Rye Zero and stuff.
Well, and I'm sure you guys have read Fallen World number one, and there is still some threads from that that are somewhat picked up in there, right? Like the Fall of Bloodshot stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, I mean, I would assume that all of that is still in canon. And the thing is, do we maybe focus too much on what's canon and what's not instead of actually looking forward to what the next story is? Maybe that's part of the problem.
I don't know. I mean, you think this – the way Valiant has always been, this stuff always tied together, right?
Yeah.
That's my whole point. If it's not going to tie together anymore, just let us know. So then I can take whatever, you know – and it doesn't have to be a hard break. You know, you can still pull threads from, you know, the previous runs into your new direction, but just let us know. I mean, instead of us guessing and having this debate, because it just wrecks your brain. I think it's going to cause more frustration to the readers and the fans because we're always going to have a debate. Well, what about this? Well, what about that? This doesn't make sense. You didn't carry this forward. You know, I thought this was canon. I just like to know, I mean, what's our new direction, and just take us there. Cause I'm cool. Just take us on the ride. I want to go on the ride, whatever it is. I want to see what you want to do, the new creative direction, and let's just go that path and let's enjoy Valiant. That's how I want to run going forward. But you know, I think they'll try to tie it all together pretty much. I don't know. I just have faith in them. They're going to tie it all together and it'll make sense at some point.
Travis?
Well, to that point, I think you can do a lot creatively to get to a place that you want. You can write it and revise it so that you get to where you need to be, and like then you figure out the machinations to get you there. You know, so like if they want to, I don't know, like retcon out all the stuff they've done with Bloodshot, for example. I think that's what we're talking about. Like, they want to get that out of the way. They could find a way to do that narratively in continuity, you know, like DC has done with the Crises or something, you know, like, you know what you want to do with the character and then you just do that to get them there. I don't think people are going to reject that, like, out of hand, you know? But I do think that respecting continuity is something that is a strength of theirs because it kind of gives value to every story that you tell, you know? Like, it's kind of like an implicit contract with the reader. It's like, no, but, like, there's value to this story. You know, it's part of the tapestry and not like, oh, it's part of the tapestry until we press delete and pretend it never happens.
I'm trying to think, though, like, to what extent is that 100% true at Valiant? And really, to what extent is that 100% true of any comics? Because even like with the Crisis stuff, there was still certain threads that fell through to the next iteration, right? And I always think of a character like Green Lantern, for example, where, you know, when Geoff Johns took over Green Lantern, like, oh man, I don't even know, mid-2000s, I think, and brought Hal Jordan back, from a point where, like, nobody gave two craps about Hal Jordan, right? Like, at that point, everybody's Green Lantern was Kyle Rayner. And Kyle is my Green Lantern because I started reading right around that time. And then when he brought in Hal Jordan and got rid of some of the stuff, like, nothing that he got rid of necessarily negated previous continuity. And through the last 15 or so years, I mean, I would say maybe even until the current run, the Grant Morrison run that's going on right now, it was like one big storyline. And we had resets since then. Like, when DC did the New 52, like, Green Lantern was basically the same. And did Rebirth, and Green Lantern was basically the same. The rest of the universe changed, but that particular book did not. It had threads going back all the way to Blackest Night and whatever the other one, Brightest Day. So, I mean, there's ways to do it. Now, I'm just wondering if, as comic book readers, sometimes we don't have enough imagination to think about where a particular phase of a book is going to take us in 5, 10, 15, 20 years, where we just want to know kind of what's coming down in 3 or 6 or 12 months. And we often forget, like, these are comic books. They're just stories, right? They're not, like, real characters, and they don't have to follow all the exact rules of continuity that would happen in, like, real life, for example, right? There's certain things that could be written off. It's just how they're written off that we should really look to figure out if they make sense within the overall arc of the story, right? Because you get new writers coming into books all the time. And every time you have a new writer, you're going to have some kind of change in continuity, regardless of who that writer is. Because the writer's got an idea for a book, and in order to make that work, there's certain things you have to throw away.
Right.
But maybe as Valiant fans, we don't give that enough credit, I think.
Now, did you, to your point, you look at Cullen Bunn's run on his start to Punk Mambo. How do you like that?
I loved it.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't much to go off of, you know, as far as her backstory, but I think he did a great job. I didn't think he, you know, it didn't shift in a direction that, like we're talking about with Bloodshot or Exo. I think he just took the base that he had and ran with it, and it's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, I loved it. And I mean, Cullen's the perfect guy for that kind of thing, right? And I don't say that just because I know Cullen. Like, he genuinely, like, that's the guy. If you want to do a good horror book, Cullen's the guy you call. So to have him on Punk Mambo is fantastic. Whenever Shadow Man comes back, he needs to be the guy doing it. Because, I mean, this guy understands what horror is about, and he understands all different types of horror. Like, he's doing a book right now that I really love, and it basically deals with, like, I mean, it's not so much magical, but there is some hints of, like, New Orleans voodoo. And, I mean, that's Shadow Man, right? And that's basically what Punk Mambo is. So, of course, like, that's the guy you need to be doing that kind of stuff. And I mean, if he ends up doing like a new Dr. Mirage book, I'd be cool with him doing it. I mean, it might be somebody else. Who knows? But like, I'd be cool with him at least putting some input in because he understands what this is about, right? Like, the guy loves horror. And what better thing to do than to have a writer that truly loves what they're doing and really understands all the intricacies of that magical system. Plus, it gives him, like, to be honest, it gives him enough where he can bring in his own take on it too, right? Because I think when Paul was on the show, for example, we talked about this a bit, and I think Travis, we've talked about it even when you came on the show. But a character like Dr. Mirage, for example, there's been like even through that a couple iterations, just through like the 2 or 3 miniseries of the characters around. Because you know we got introduced to like the Dead Side and like this all these different aspects of the Dead Side in that first miniseries. I don't know if you guys picked up the what did they call it? I think it was just like the pull list variant that had the map of the Dead Side.
Right.
You guys know what I'm talking about?
Mm-hmm.
And you know, we always thought the Dead Side was like the entire realm of like the quote unquote afterlife. And the way that Jenman Van Meter had done it is the Dead Side was just kind of part of that. And there were these other, like, we'll just say countries or realms that were connected to the Dead Side that encompassed this overall arcing magical realm. And then, you know, when Matt took over some of that stuff, and the stuff that he was doing with Shadow Man, he brought in like the life side and all that other stuff. And the problem I had there is like, that's cool that you're bringing this other stuff in, but what about like all these other realms that we were introduced to before? Why not explore those things? Because you're creating this really rich mythology, but you're not even talking about it, right? Like, that's what I want to know because I'm invested in this character and in this adventure that they're going into. So give me stuff in those realms.
I agree with you, Martin. And it's always been like that with this whole voodoo Dead Side part of Valiant. That should be a tent pole. And really, Valiant could be broken up in two spheres that at times interact with each other. But you really have to flesh out this whole Dead Side, Life Side, this whole Shadow Man, Punk Mambo, Dr. Mirage side of things. I mean, you can really make that its own universe in its own. And then you have the regular Valiant universe. And they're going to interact at times, but it's so much potential on that side. And I think that's what, as fans, we want more of that. Even from the VH1 Shadow Man, we want more of this, you know, New Orleans, Louisiana, voodoo, dark side. I mean, it all ties together. It could be its own, you know, Vertigo's or Sandman type of thing all on its own. They could really expand out there and really do a lot of creative things with those characters if they wanted to. But you know, we all know how Valiant is. They kind of focus on, you know, 4 or 5 titles that they want to push out. But you know, if they had unlimited money, unlimited, you know, resources, I really think they would really explore that side of the Valiant universe. And as a fan, I would love it. I don't know about you guys, but I would love it.
No, I agree. I mean, you guys know I love horror and low sci-fi. Those are my two things. So if you just want to do an entire universe, just horror books, like, I'm in. I don't know how many other people will buy them, but you'll at least have a sale of one for all your books. Travis, give me some thoughts.
Yeah, I agree with you guys that I think, you know, the whole Shadow Man end of the universe is important. And, you know, they kind of stumbled early on and have been trying to get back, you know, for a while now, you know, like baby steps in Ninjak, and then you like bring him back in his own series. That kind of ended prematurely, it seems like. So I think that Shadow Man is going to come back, you know, before too long, and hopefully like they'll kind of invest in it. I've also seen like a promo image of like an unannounced series, of which there's like 3 series yet to be announced coming out this year.
Yeah.
And it kind of looks like When Mirage.
Yes.
Have you seen it?
Duan, did I send that to you or to Ronnie?
Not me.
No, you know what? No, I sent it. I did send it to you. You just didn't see it because I put it. I put it in our main chat, not in the private chat.
Oh.
Yes. I think Aaron and Ronnie commented on it. Yeah, I did see that. Matter of fact, remind me, Duan, after we record it, to just forward you all the emails.
That would be great.
But I did see that.
To have those emails.
It's a teaser image that was sent out on an email this past week. That I agree with you. To me, it looks like Gwen. It's a character with a forehead tattoo, and there's some ethereal hand grabbing going on with an unannounced artist, and no mention of what the book is about. But yeah, to me, it also looks like Dr. Mirage, and it, to be honest, it looks like old school Dr. Mirage. Because you know there there were some changes made when Valiant brought him out in that series that Jen Mavita did, but the concept just on that image alone looks a lot closer to what the original Dr. Mirage was, and that's pretty exciting to me. I mean the original Dr. Mirage series I don't think was the best. I would say the current stuff is handled much better. Mm-hmm. Both artistically and in the writing, but there were some concepts that were introduced in that I thought were really interesting, and that I would like to see brought back. So I am pretty excited for whatever this teaser was, but it does look like Mirage to me.
And so, he's not going to have the boots on and the headband. I thought that was cheesy.
But see, the thing is, then you can have some kind of correlation to The Visitor, which is my third favorite Valiant book of all time. Because you guys know I love the cheese. I know, it's funny, right? So someone's like, oh, X-Manowar. What's your favorite Valiant character? X-Manowar. Like, people can get behind that. You know what I mean? They're like, all right, X-Manowar, I can get behind this. This is a good book. But then we're like, okay, what's like your number 2 and 3? And I say Psylords and The Visitor. They're like, are you for real?
What? Record scratch.
but yes, I am for real. Number one, give me some leeway because I love crappy horror movies. And so, I love terrible things. I genuinely do. I don't necessarily need to have like an A-list cast of characters or a fantastic writer or a high budget. Sometimes really terrible horror flicks are the best thing ever. I don't know what it is. I just love them. And that goes to comic books sometimes. And I can tell you that Psylords was not the best Valiant book and Dr. Mirage was not the best Valiant book. But there's something about like what you like and what you don't like. And I just fucking, am I allowed to cuss on this podcast? Like we haven't figured this out yet. We'll say one per episode. I just really effing love them. You know what I mean? Like they're fun and they have some fun concepts and really ultimately that's what comics are about is about having fun and escaping for a few minutes. And as a result, I love Psylords and I love, The Visitor versus the Valiant Universe and then the series that came out of that. But there's a connection between Dr. Mirage and The Visitor. And so that excites me. That's all I'm saying.
So you think we'll get The Visitor?
I mean, I would love The Visitor. I would love The Visitor. I don't know if, spoiler alert for, how old is that book? 30 years old? Spoiler alert for a 30 year old book. Pete Stanchek is a visitor. Can you do Pete now? Probably not, right?
No, it'd have to be a new character.
Yeah, because I mean, anybody that's read the original stuff would already know it's Pete, so it can't be Pete.
And he was cheesy the way they brought him back. I thought they could have brought him back better. But anyway, like you said,
you mean now or then?
No, the old one.
Okay.
But like you said, it was creative. It took you someplace. You know, go along on the journey, but. If we learn anything, we know with this new Valiant, they'll bring old characters back in a new form, right?
Sure.
And like Livewire. Like Livewire was like a throwaway Harbinger character in the first run, and they brought her back as a major character in the new run, mm-hmm. You know? So if they do bring something like the Visitor back, I think they would have a big impact on the universe.
Travis, give me some feedback, because I know you got to go watch Game of Thrones.
Thrones.
Yeah, I mean, I guess what I would say is that, you know, Livewire, as we know it, is kind of a Dice Art creation, right? And yeah. It's like, he did a great job. So, you know, they just, if they're going to be bringing back more properties from the 90s, of which it's pretty well mined already, you know, they just need to have good creators with, like, you know, like, creative visions about what to do with the characters.
I agree.
I think they should let Martin do one of those characters.
Oh, we're going to get to that in a second. Are you leaving us, Travis?
I can hang out for another minute or two. All right, you guys want to keep going? That's cool.
Yeah, no, we're going to keep going, bro. Because I got nothing better to do, and Dewan doesn't either.
Okay. Bye, Travis. We love you.
All right. Love you guys.
All right.
Bye, Travis. You can find Travis on Twitter at The Great Magnet. Go find him. I hope Game of Thrones is great.
Yeah, me too. All right.
Later, buddy.
Stay valiant.
Yeah, it's funny that you said that. So, do you remember when I wrote this, how do I want to say it?
I know you wrote something.
Well, we'll just say like an alternate, ending to Book of Death.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
All right. So I never finished it. I envisioned it as like a 6-issue mini. I wrote the script for the first 3 issues. I had a great artist that was like, he's like, can I see your story? And I was like, sure. So I sent it to him. He's like, dude, I love it. Let me draw it. And I was like, all right. So he did, I can't remember. He did like 10 pages, I think, for the first issue. Mm-hmm. And the reason I did it is because the way that series ended, I really enjoyed. But the way that some of the threads were picked up, I felt like, were kind of different enough from what we had seen in Book of Death that they didn't make sense. Okay. And so I picked up the story basically with Roku heading to the Master Dark Tree and in her anger chopping it down and therefore releasing Master Dark. And that led to like a Dark Unity. So I had a Unity team with Shadow Man, Punk Mambo, both Mirages, and God, I can't remember. There was a fifth character in there, and I can't remember who it was.
Ooh.
But it was basically Dark Unity.
Okay.
In order to get together and set up some kind of way to defeat Master Dark.
Was it Sandra Dark too?
No. Well, Sandra was in it, but she was not part of Dark Unity.
Okay.
But Shadow Man was the leader of the team, because remember at the end of that Unity issue, they had Shadow Man in shackles in like a prison or something.
Mm-hmm.
And so he was made to lead this Dark Unity team, except for the fact that because of all the shit that he had done, he was not quite ready to be team leader. So Punk Mambo ended up being team leader eventually. But I had a ton of fun doing it. So
hold on. Punk Mambo was team leader?
Yeah, when Shadow Man kind of crapped out during a battle, she became team leader.
Oh, that's got to be a fucked up team. Excuse my language. That's got to be a messed up team.
Yeah, wow. Yeah. It was fun. Okay. It was fun.
I didn't mean to interrupt. That's just...
No. Not at all. Not at all. It was fun. And I wish I had, you know, finished writing the rest of the thing, because I had a ton of fun reading it. And of course, like, I don't expect to ever be put out, right? But it was one of those fanfic things where I was like, you know what? Like, I got some time. Let me put this together because I would like to see this instead. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's why I wish they did more of that. Oh, God, what was it? The Kindle? Oh, man. I wish I remember the full name of it. You remember they had a Kindle store for Valiant characters. Did you ever read any of those?
I remember you guys talking about it.
Yeah, so
I never looked at them.
So there's a section of the Kindle store, and I don't know if it's still around or not. I mean, I know the stories are because I own a lot of them. I bought them. Matter of fact, Jake Ingman, he wrote a bunch of them, mostly related to Shadow Man. And I bought all those. They're like, whatever, 99 cents or like $1.99 or something. Mm-hmm. And there's like certain rules that you have to follow in order for them to be accepted. But I mean, like, you can very easily do a story that could theoretically be in canon with Valiant characters as long as you follow these rules. And so Jake did a bunch of them. I don't know about a bunch, but like 3 or 4. I have those. I think there was one. I want to say that Tom King did one.
Really?
I'm pretty sure. Again, this has been years since I've seen this thing, so I don't necessarily remember. But I want to say that, like, Tom King or maybe Donnie Cates, like, these kind of guys had done some. Because Kindle wanted to expand this, whatever it was called, the Kindle Universe thing. And right. So they were bringing in, like, some, like, legit comic writers to write stories. And then fans could submit stuff. And it wasn't just Valiant. Like, there were other things on there. But, yeah, it was a ton of fun. You should go check those out, by the way. Yeah,
I think I will, because some – like, even your story sounds interesting, because I just went back and read Punk Mambo Zero. Mm-hmm. And the one part I didn't pick up on originally was, like, she was super smart. Like, she went to an elite school, and then, you know, she dabbled in the punkness, and then she kind of balanced herself out. But she's, like, no pushover. She's not dumb.
Oh, no.
So, yeah, so I can kind of – like, I – brushed it off at first, but I can see her leading a team, like, and even having the respect of, like, Dr. Mirage and Wynn, you know?
Yeah.
Because, you know, they're, like, scientists and highly educated or whatnot, and they could, she could reason with them.
Yeah.
And, but then she's into, you know, the spiritual side of thing, like the voodoo side of thing, to where she can relate to Shadow Man. So that's going places, buddy. I like that. I like that. I really do like that.
Look, like I said, I don't expect it to go anywhere, and I have never finished a story, so couldn't tell you. I couldn't tell you where it ends up being. It was fun. It was fun. I would like to see more exploration of that side of the Valiant universe. Because frankly, I don't think there's ever really been much exploration of it. Right? Like, when Jen took over the book and she did that miniseries, I was like, all right, we're gonna get, like, something out of this. Because I love those genres. And I think you mentioned, like, Vertigo, for example. Like, Valiant would do really well. I mean, I don't know. I'm not in the comic industry, so I'm making this up. But I think Valiant could do really well by targeting that market. Because there are plenty of horror books and plenty of horror fans. But there's not a huge amount of horror content. I mean, you can say that for a lot of things. Like, I'm a huge anthology guy. So I always tell everybody, like, you should do an anthology. And nobody does it but Aftershock, and that's why I love Aftershock. Because Aftershock has the balls to do an anthology book. Right. And Alterna. Alterna does one too. But nobody else will do it. I remember, like, talking to Desh one time. I was like, Dinesh, dude, why don't you guys do an anthology? Like, I think it would do really well. And I love Dinesh, but his answer was, well, you know, there's not really a market for that.
Mm-hmm.
But if you go into, like, Kickstarter, which I buy a ton of Kickstarters, there's, like, dozens of them, and they do extremely well. You know, they sell tens of thousands of copies. So obviously there's a market. It just might not be the standard comic book shop kind of market.
So do you think Valiant is, like, being handicapped by trying to bring the dark side and those characters into the mainstream universe? Do you think they need to just spin it off and kind of do, like, a Vertigo series and just say, hey, this is Valiant presents the dark side. And then they can just flesh out all of those characters on their own, kind of, and they can bring them back into the mainstream universe, but they can just let them breathe and let creators just run with them on that side of the universe and separate it from the rest.
So if you had asked me that, like, you know, 6 months or a year ago, I probably would have said yeah. Mm-hmm. But with Cullen doing Punk Mambo right now, I would just kind of say, let's wait and see what happens.
Well, Cullen might be great. That's what I'm saying. He might be the bridge, right?
Yeah.
You know, he's a perfect bridge. But I'm just saying, let people run with it. And just – it may go against what Valiant does as far as, you know, having one universe and it all kind of coming together. But I would love for people, just like you said about the Kindle stuff, just let it breathe. Go out there and just find the limits of that dark side, and or the dead side, and just I said dark side. I've been watching Star Wars all day. the dead side. It's just and see where it goes, man. And then you just pick the golden nuggets out of that, and maybe bring it. You know, have that bridge like Cullen, bring it back to the mainstream universe. I think it may be worth a shot, man. I'd be interested in it.
Yeah, and you know, I think with comics it might be a little tougher, right? So if you do movies, and I hate to go back to MCU because I'm not a huge Marvel guy, but you know, those movies have taken 11 years to develop,
right?
But you can probably do that better with a movie series than you can with comic books, just because of the simple fact that you have more income coming in on a movie, theoretically at least. Than you would with a comic. You know, you might have a few thousand people in comics, whereas even with a movie that makes no money like Hellboy, and that's not throwing shade, by the way, because I love the Hellboy comics, but the Hellboy movie didn't do well, and you would think that with the number of people that are passionate about Hellboy, that the movie would do well.
Right.
And that just doesn't always work out. It doesn't always translate. So the problem really is, like, how do you make that translate to something that's maybe mainstream enough to make work?
What about an animated series?
It depends how it's done.
Yeah. You almost have to have a strong brand to kind of push an animated series out.
Yeah. It depends how it's done. So I think right now, like, if you were to have, like, a Dr. Mirage Netflix original series – mm-hmm. Right? Like, that might work okay. I don't know, like, if that's the right place for it, because of the Sabrina series. So maybe it's too late for that on Netflix. Or maybe not, I don't know. But, like, the Sabrina series did very well. And, you know, I think they got renewed for season two, like, basically after the first episode. Because there was enough interest. So that's what I'm saying, like, there's people that want this kind of stuff. You just need to figure out how to juggle all these different mediums to make that work. And I don't have an answer, and I don't think the majority of the comic industry has one. Like, the only one that may have an answer is Marvel, but they're established, so they can have an answer. You know what I mean? Like, how does Valiant compete with something like that?
They can't really. Like I said, you've got to have a strong brand there, or just a really good creative team to just throw it out there and people to gravitate towards it. So it would be a huge risk. And now that I'm thinking about it, maybe, you know, this Cullen run on Punk Mumbo is a good test to see, you know, where he takes it. And then if you can take threads off of it and grow those threads, maybe you can get something there. But, like we said earlier, I think he may be the perfect person to kind of meld some of these characters that we don't think enough has been done with.
Yeah.
And see where it goes. And we know Cullen will do a good job, you know, but I'm interested in the secondary threads and the tertiary threads, where those go. Because if those are solid, then we really have something to get to that end point, like I was saying before, to really grow that side of the Valiant universe. Mm-hmm. But you have to start somewhere, right?
Sure.
So they chose to start with Punk Mumbo, and we'll see what happens after that, you know?
Yeah. I'm curious. I'm very curious. I really enjoyed the Andy Diddle Shadowman run, and I was a little sad when it ended. I think the ending was pretty good. I would like to know, like, exactly what the deal was, you know. I didn't check sales, so I don't know how well it sold or anything. And I know ultimately it's really probably sales that determines whether a series is ongoing or limited run or whatever. But I think that book had a lot of potential, and I hope some of that potential is picked up. Because I don't know how much you remember about the original run, but when you remember reading the original Shadowman run from whatever year that was, like 92, I think it came out.
Yeah, I do. Like the whole Bourbon Street jazz.
Yeah.
And it was kind of darky too. Like, it was everyday life, but it was dark, you know, dark alleys, murder, you know, poison or mystical. I think they did a really good job with it back then.
I agree.
Really did a good job.
I agree. But if you remember, in the original series, I think it was Shooter and, oh God, who else was in there? Oh man, now I can't remember and I feel terrible. Anyways, the original series, there was one writer for the first like three issues. And then Bob took over in issue four, and that's when we got Master Dark introduced.
Right.
And when Master Dark was introduced, that was like an entirely different book, you know? The first couple you had like, I don't remember what Shadow, he fought like a giant troll or something, I don't remember. Like it was good.
Right.
But it wasn't like the stuff that Bob was doing, and Bob was doing that stuff by himself. He was writing and drawing the book. The entire run by himself. And you know, that's also nice because you don't see that anymore.
No.
Right? But when he took over the book, you had all these really interesting elements introduced that really made the book different, and stand out. And a lot of the elements that Valiant has tried to do with Shadow Man over the past, 7 years. God, 7 years. Can you believe that? But over the past 7 years, really stemmed out of Bob's run, and not so much stuff before. But even through then, like, I don't feel like we've gotten enough of that. I hate to ever crap on anything, and I'm not going to. But like the Shadow Man run that we had with Searcher and Justin Jordan, I thought was really really fun. And really brought some interesting stuff into the Shadow Man mythology, that we hadn't seen before. And for some reason that just didn't work out. And, you know, we had, issue 10 was that weird, like almost anthology-like issue. Right. Which, I think that funny. There was a story in there by the guy that wrote, what's the book that I don't like? The only Valiant book ever to come out that I don't like. Dead Drop. That's the one. There was a story.
It's a great book.
No, it's not. There was a story in there by the guy that wrote that book. And matter of fact, that story was actually really good. I have no problems with that writer because I actually follow his indie stuff. He does some really interesting stuff. But yeah, there was that zero issue, and then we had Milligan came in and did that like three issue run, and the book ended or whatever. I wish, you know, the problem is comics are hard, man, you know? And, when you have to clean up a lot of things, or you feel like you need to clean up a lot of things, sometimes you end up alienating people. And, I think if Valiant didn't feel like they had to clean up the previous 10 issues of Shadow Man with that three issue run that Milligan did, we may have had more Shadow Man stories, and the Shadow Man stories that we've had since may have been much different than when we got. You know, Matt tried to do a lot of stuff with the Dead Side and all that, and it was fine, but it wasn't Shadow Man. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
I could see where he would get the inspiration to do that kind of stuff, but ultimately, Shadow Man is about the voodoo stuff and the Loa stuff, and that wasn't really in what Matt was trying to do. And that's not a knock on Matt at all, because Matt knows I love him. Every time I see him at Heroes or whatever, I tell him that. It's not a knock on him at all, but I would have wanted something different out of that.
Yeah, you need somebody who specializes in that genre of writing and creativity, right? You need, because it has a horror element, it also has a historical element to it, cultural element.
Yeah.
You know, and you really need somebody that has all of that wrapped in one that can dive in there and pull a good story out. Because I think the common thread of what we're saying is we want that story. The Valiant fans want this story to succeed, which you don't see a lot. You know, if you get a crappy run, people are like, screw it. You know, screw that character.
Yeah.
I'm done. What's next? Who else am I reading? But there's so much there that it's interesting to the reader that it's intriguing. Like for me, the historical side, the religious side, the spiritual side to it, that's all in my wheelhouse, dude.
Yeah. Just
I can go run all day with it. So, but you have to have the right people to pull it off, you know, and to your point, you know, you've got these great writers that come in and try to spin it, but that's not their wheelhouse. They got to get somebody in there that's what they do and run with it. And I think if they do it well, whoever they get to do it, that can do it well, it may be like a historic run. Like you talk about some of these big runs on Spider-Man and Batman, you know, Superman. If you do it well, it could be a signature run for the Valiant Universe.
Well, I mean, Batman hasn't had an issue in like 3 years, so I don't know what you're talking about.
Tom King is the man.
Wait, what? Who?
No, I mean, even like, you know, the Nightfall run, you know.
I agree with you. Of course, I'm joking. Tom, I don't have any hate for you.
Yeah, we love Tom. We love Tom.
Well, I don't know about that, but, you know, I would rather it be something else. Anyways, no, I know what you're saying. I agree. The problem is, like, this is comics, you know what I mean? Like, it's so hard to make a comic work. And I think sometimes comic publishers have a really tough decision to make on what direction to take a comic in when you don't know, like, what the best way to sell it is, right? Sure. Because, like, you can make Shadow Man a great horror book. Like I said, you know, Bob's run was great. When Acclaim took over, they did some really interesting stuff. They brought Zero in. I think the stuff with Zero was actually really, really good. I actually think the Acclaim Shadow Man might be one of the best Acclaim books that came out.
Right.
Because they did really interesting stuff with the character. And then even the stuff since 2012, we've had some really good stuff coming in there. But the problem is, like, you have to juggle this thing where, like, do we make this appeal to, like, horror fans, like, horror book fans, or do we make this appeal to Valiant fans? I think that's sometimes what the problem is, right?
It could be.
Because there's a lot of Valiant fans that have been around for the past, whatever, 25, 30 years that see Shadow Man as something, or that whole section of the universe as something. But I wonder if maybe that's not necessarily the best way to take that section of the universe, right? Like, if you just said, screw it. Like, if you're a true Valiant fan, you're going to come with us. But we're gonna make this appeal to people that love horror books. I wonder if that wouldn't be more successful than just making it appeal to horror fans and to people that have been reading these books for 30 years. I think that's part of the problem that Valiant sometimes has because of the way that Valiant fans could be. This is not every Valiant fan. But like every publisher has this, right? Like there's people that have been reading Marvel or DC for, you know, 40, 50 years. And sure, though, that way, I think DC might be hindered a little bit more than Marvel has. I think Marvel may have, at least the image they portray is that they have more younger readers picking those books up. But I wonder if maybe that's part of the problem, you know, and maybe people listening to this will get angry at me, and that's fine. You can find me on Twitter at GeekFine. You can yell at me all you want. I may not even listen to you because I don't reply to every tweet, but also, I don't care if you yell at me, so it's fine. But I do wonder if maybe part of the problem that Valiant can have is appealing too much to the existing comic book base, right? Because you know, like, you and I are always going to buy Valiant books. As long as there's Valiant, we're going to buy Valiant, yep. Right? Yep. And there's a lot of people listening to this that are exactly the same way, right? Justin, JC, like, plenty of people. Mm-hmm. As long as there's Valiant, you will buy a Valiant book. But, like, Valiant can't be successful of people that will just always buy Valiant books.
Right. That's my whole point. My whole point is, Martin, I think at some point, and it happens just statistically, you're going to give the right creator, the right group of characters, the right book, and it's going to blossom into something that none of us expected, right? And you've seen it with, you know, any successful run of any major comic book series. Mm-hmm. And even non-major, you just, like, that's a brilliant run. That's genius. What he or she did there was great.
Yeah.
I think if you put the Shadow Man you know, part of the universe with the right creator in a crucible, you can get something like the Watchmen, you know, and that's big stuff, but you can get something revolutionary or just a great story, you know, like I'm not big into literature and all that, but there's certain books that you're just like home run book, you know, that's just something that you have to have on your bookshelf or your iPad or whatever. I think you can get that with Shadow Man. I really do. The potential's there, and it's just waiting to be tapped.
I think
it doesn't have to be, to your point, it doesn't have to be something that is palatable to us mainstreamers because we're going to be there, or something that says, hey, we got to grab new readers out of it. If it's good, it's good. Mm. People are going to come, you know. That's my whole point.
I agree. Again, it's probably easy for us to say that, right? Because we don't work in comics. You know what I mean?
Right.
The hard part really is when you're actually putting out comics, and how do you make this appeal to enough people? Because you can't survive on just Valiant fans.
Exactly. Hey,
sorry, Valiant fans. Valiant will not continue if it's just us reading the books. But how do you make that go forward, right? And I think, you know, that's why I said a couple episodes ago that I hope nobody at Valiant took offense. I don't think anybody did, because I'm sure I would have heard. But when I mentioned Heather's name, and I said that I think Heather is really key to making a lot of great moves at Valiant, because she really has brought in a lot of fantastic talent into the universe. And Heather used to work at Marvel. Now she's at DC. You can look all about Heather. I'm not going to talk about Heather again. Heather Antos, I love you. And that's all I will say.
We love you, Heather.
Yeah, we love you, Heather. But, like, you need these kind of people, right? And we often forget about, like, editors and everybody else, the marketing people, all that stuff. We forget about those people, that the stuff they need to do to bring in the right people into Valiant. Right. If we want Valiant to be successful, we don't need to just blindly follow what Valiant is doing. We need to understand what Valiant is doing, support it, and try to get other people to understand why that is. Okay, and not by being zealot Valiant fans. That's not going to work.
Right.
You need to find a way to get people excited, because you're excited, and you need to figure out why you were excited and bring that in. Because, I mean, I can tell you why I'm excited. I'm sure you can tell me why. I'm sure Travis can tell me why. But anybody else that's a Valiant fan, can you tell me why you're excited about Valiant?
It's easy for me. But to your point is, can Valiant take the risk to go in a totally different direction and take the risk in having somebody take those characters? And at this point, we're talking about the Shadow Man, Punk Mambo Run, you know, the whole that side. Can they take that risk of letting somebody run with it? You know, because if it fails, it fails, you know, and that character's ruined for a long time. You know, we've already seen it ruined once. I don't think you can take a strike two on it, but do you risk the home run? You know, if you do a sports analogy, are you going to pay this guy $250 million in baseball to hit home runs, even though you can't put a team around him, but it's going to put, you know, cheeks in the seats. Is it worth it?
So baseball, never heard of it. So I'm going to assume what you mean by this analogy. maybe at some point I'll look up what this baseball means. I think that analogy works better for somebody like Marvel or DC, and not as well for anybody else.
I agree.
Like, maybe even Image, like, that might be okay. But even Image, I think, has an issue sometimes putting out something that will really resonate with a comic book reading audience. And I'm not talking about, like, a collector market. I know you're a collector, so don't take offense to what I'm about to say. But there are plenty of books that live and die by the collector market.
Mm-hmm. Right? Oh, yeah.
And it's very tough for a comic book publisher to figure out how to step outside of just being a collector book. Okay. So, like, you know, in relation to Valiant, like, 1 in 100 or 1 in 250 or whatever, 1 in 500 variants might work to an extent. But you need to find a way otherwise to sell books. By the way, I want you to talk to me about this the troll variant, the Punk Mambo troll hair variant, because I saw you post the picture of it. Was that you that posted the picture, or was that
Travis? No, that was Justin. It wasn't me. It might have been Justin.
I saw somebody tweet at it from the Collect Valiant account.
It was Justin.
Yeah. All right, I'll have to ask Justin then, because it looked, when I saw it, like it sounds like a joke, especially when you call it like the troll hair variant, but it looks fucking cool, dude.
It's supposed to be furry hair, man, on the cover.
It looks really fucking cool. Right.
But to your point, like, okay, only the scarcity of the book or the gimmicky of the book, that only takes you so far. Because we've seen books that are like 1 in 10 variants. So like, what is it? Harbinger 4?
Yeah.
1 in 10 or 1 in 20 or something like that. I think it's 1 in 20 or something. That book's valuable. You know, the first live wire.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, the story, if the story's good and you have the collectability of the book, that's a home run. You know, the collectability only takes you so far. If the story's good, or if it's a pivotal book, or it's an introduction to a character, major shift in the timeline or the art or something like that, that adds to it. Then you got solid gold. You know, so I agree with you. Collectability only takes you so far. You have to have good stuff, you know. And Valiant, for a long time, they've had good stuff. And, you know, I think some of this Kent run, some of those 1 in 50 EXO books, the later books, you know, if EXO takes off, those are going to be hard to get. So that's another podcast, another time. But you got to have a good story, man. You got to have a good story to back up anything. You know, to your point, collectability, You can't keep the shop open off of collectability alone.
It's funny you should say that. So the same day that this comes out, you can go listen to my other show, Comic Talk Today, in which I shit all over Key Collector Comics, and talk about this. I don't know about shit all over, but maybe I do, just a little bit. So go listen to that, Comic Talk Today. The collecting market is, there's a niche, right? But the thing is, like, how do you go about doing that, right? So you're a collector. I'm not a collector. I mean, there's certain things that I will buy, but there are certain things that I just don't really want to buy. I mean, I see them and I think they're cool, like the troll hair variant for Puck Mambo. I think it's cool. Don't want to buy it. I'm not willing to spend the amount of money that it's worth.
Right.
Right? Or that it's going for.
Right.
But there's other things that, like, I'd be happy to plop down 100, 250 or whatever for it, right? That certain things are just not for me, and they're for you, and they might be for somebody listening, but just not for me. But I hope Valiant can find a way out of that, right? Like, I mentioned that question to Matt when he was on, last episode. And I think he had a good answer, right? His answer was basically like, we do look at the collector's market, but that's not our main focus on things. Which I understand and I agree with, but, you know, of course, they're definitely actively looking for it, and it definitely does help sales, because otherwise you wouldn't have like a 1 in 100 variant, right? If the collector's market wasn't part of the business model, you would just have like open orders on any variant, and there's very few comic publishers that do that, and even the ones that do it on very few books, because the reason is very simple. Like, there is a market where people, that's what people do. They buy variants, and that drives a lot of sales. So I totally understand. There's no knock on that at all. You know, I always say it's comics is a business, and if you forget that, then you're doing it wrong. Because that's, I mean, people gotta eat, bro. You know what I mean?
They gotta, you know, change, buy diapers for those babies, man. Yeah.
You'll know soon enough.
I know.
You'll know soon enough.
But I think, Valiant does a good job of maintaining a good balance for the collectors, the shops, and the regular Valiant fans, readers, and, trying to get new readers. They do a good job. You're not overly saturated with collecting items, especially, you know, this new management of Valiant. They really have kind of cut back on the collectible side.
Mm.
It's more manageable as a collector.
I do still want that lava lamp, though.
I think we can get you that. I think we can get you.
I will pay for it. I just want the goddamn lava lamp.
Call your local LCS, man. They'll get you that daggone thing.
I'm sending Greg a message.
Are you going straight to the source? Are you big timing everybody, man? It's for the LCSs, man. Like, get it from your local comic shop, man.
Hey, no. I have a Valiant variant. Am I not considered an LCS?
Oh, you do, don't you?
Yeah, I do. That's right.
Yeah. If anybody, you do have your own, and if anybody wants one,
yeah, I still have a box of them. Matter of fact, you know what? Let's do this right now. I want anybody that will comment on the tweet to this episode, and anybody that will send an iTunes, whatever it's called, Apple Podcast review for this episode, if you leave one of those, I will send you a copy of X-Men Manowar number 1, Valiant Dead Base exclusive variant, courtesy of a bunch of very nice people, including yourself, Duan, and Justin, and Ronnie, and a bunch of other people that were very kind enough to pitch in on that.
Yeah. Those books need to be out there. People need to get those in their hands.
It's a great cover.
Yeah, it is.
It's a fantastic cover. I need to message that guy and get that original art cover. What? I don't need to buy any more art. God damn it.
Yes, you do. Yes, you do. Yes, you do.
I saw it somewhere. I think, oh, God. I swear I saw it somewhere, like the original art for it.
You need to get it, man.
I need to get it. All right. Anyways. But yeah, if you do that, leave a comment on the tweet, either at Geekvine or at Valiant_Central. We'll have the tweet, or at Nerd Legion. And, either that or leave a review on Apple Podcast or wherever else. And, I will send you a copy because I still have a box and a half actually, of those variants. And my wife would love to get him out of the garage.
And a lot of people don't have those books, so they might be collectible.
That's true.
You never know. You never know.
There were only, 500 copies made? I think something like that. Yeah. Anyways, God, I wish Travis hadn't left to go watch that garbage Game of Thrones.
He's out.
Guy. Shame on him.
He's celebrating Cinco de Mayo watching Game of Thrones.
I had a great time at Cinco de Mayo. We went to this Mexican restaurant.
Okay.
And my wife's like, can I get a margarita? And the guy's like, small, medium, or large? She's like, large.
Grande.
And I was like, you know what? Get me one too. And I haven't drank C2E2. So it's been how long? A month and a half almost?
But that's not keto, is it?
It's not keto. Not at all.
Okay.
I was like, I'll have one too. Give me a large. And they came in, and let me tell you, they were large. Like very large.
Like, was it like spring break large? Like,
dude, it's like the size of my head. It's like the size of my head large. I said, holy crap, this is what we got. So so I drank mine, and I had to finish my wife's too because she couldn't finish hers. And then I was like, can you drive? Because I'm not driving.
Was it top shelf or was it just,
I don't know what they put in it, but you can taste the tequila.
Oh, so that's good. That's good.
Yeah, that's all that matters.
Oh. So was this like at noon today or like an hour, two hours ago?
You know, it was like 2 hours before we recorded.
All right. So you're feeling good.
Yeah. Like, yeah. Like I got home and I was home for like, an hour and yeah.
All right. So I got to do the Nick Wetmore. So was it lime, like Ghostbuster green? And did you have salt or sugar on the rim?
Salt, of course.
Okay. Salt is good. All right. Now, was it, what color was the margarita?
It was yellow.
It was yellow. So you had the house margarita.
Yes, sure. Why not?
You didn't do fancy pantsy. You didn't do pink Cadillac or
what blue would I lava. Do? Like Patron or something? No, dude.
You just wanted to participate in Cinco de Mayo.
Well, let me tell you, they were half price because it's Cinco de Mayo.
Ooh.
So it was like $10 for this margarita. That's like, I don't know, like a liter of margaritas.
So they just brought the milk jug of margarita juice out and poured it in.
Probably. It's probably like the worst possible tequila you could buy in the universe, but who cares?
You know what I mean? You'll go blind in Night Market.
Who cares? It was $10. I don't care.
Right. You know what? You didn't get a DUI, right?
Nope.
So that's a win.
You're right.
Embrace that.
I paid $10 for like half a gallon of margarita. It's fine.
I bet you could put that in your truck and it would grow. It would get like 20 miles to the gallon.
I did hear that though. If the zombie apocalypse comes, you don't worry about going to the gas station. You raid the liquor store.
You get $10 margarita juice.
Yeah, because you can just put the liquor in it, and even though like your car can't run forever on just pure alcohol, right. most cars, like if your car is made within the last like 20 years, it can run on just like pure moonshine for like several thousand miles.
Yeah, at the alcohol. Yeah.
Yeah.
You notice how funny. Not funny, how resourceful we get as humans. Like, you remember, like, in 06 or 08, you remember when the gas prices were, like, $4 or $5 a gallon?
Mm-hmm.
And people were buying old Datsun, pickup trucks or whatever that are diesel. And they were taking, they were going to, like, Mexican restaurants and taking their grease.
Yes.
And running their car off of
it. Yeah, biodiesel.
Biodiesel.
Yeah, right? Yeah, I remember.
And then gas prices go down. You don't hear anything about biodiesel. Yeah,
and then no one gives a shit. Dude, I used to put paint thinner in my car.
In your truck?
Yeah. If you do, you can do, what was it, like 3 ounces, I think, of paint thinner to a full tank of gas.
Uh-huh.
You actually got better gas mileage, too.
Is that like the little jet fuel you can get, the STP?
I don't know. Maybe.
That you put in. Yeah, it's like an additive.
Maybe. But yeah, you could put paint thinner in there and it would work.
And it won't damage your engine?
No, it wouldn't damage it. There was like a limit to how much you could put in there. But yeah, you did that and you even got better gas mileage, dude. I was getting like, I don't even remember. At the time I had a 6-cylinder Eclipse. And I was getting like 400 miles to a tank. Yeah,
that's
dude.
Like a hybrid, man.
Dude, yeah. That shit worked. But now nobody cares. Well, I don't know. Gas has gone up now. Maybe people care. But yeah, my father-in-law is into all that shit. He's super weird about like the government collapsing and all whatever.
Right.
Like he hoards gold coins and whatever, you know what I mean? He's one of those guys.
I know what TV shows he watches. But just leave you at that.
Uh-huh. But yeah, you know what? Whatever. If the zombies come, I'm going over there.
Because he's
got 100 acres of just wild boar. So I'm going to take my bow and arrow and just go hunting.
He's got a bunker with
I can't talk
six
about
years that. Years worth of rice.
He won't let me talk about that.
Okay. All right.
But I will say that's when it hits, that's where I'm going because he's got the goods.
There you go.
Mm-hmm.
I will seek you out.
Oh, man. All right, let's wrap this up, Duan.
Yes, sir.
You have been listening to the Valiant Central Podcast, the number one Valiant podcast in the world. Sorry, Sean. I'm just going to call it. Sean gets mad when I say that. He doesn't even give a shit. I just like to pretend he gets mad. go listen to OTV. OTV is awesome. Go listen to that and VCR and all those guys. They do fantastic work. If you want to get in touch with us, you can, of course, find us on Twitter. Duan is at Collect Valiant. Travis is at The Great Magnet. I'm a Geek Fan. The show is at Valiant_Central. And we'll be back in 2 weeks. Thanks for listening. Catch you next time. Stay Valiant.